case where only male was treated. The overall response was dose dependent, with discriminating dose between around 0.3 microgram per larva. And when it comes to the real world, it is both lethal as well as sublethal effects that lead to the reduction in the OBLR densities in the orchards treated with pyriproxifen. And the best utility of this project and projects like this is to educate farmers in the process of transition from the this conventional insecticides to the reduced risk chemicals, because farmers want to see insects dead right away, and they don't find insects dead with these products. But when they'll see that insects treated with these products won't be able to make to the next generation, they'll maybe shift their transition to the new products. With this, I would like to say thanks to my advisors, Dr. Jay Brunner, Dr. John Dunley, and other members of Dr. Brunner's lab at WSU Tree Fruit Research and Extension Center, Wenatchee, Washington. And also to the funding agencies, Washington Tree Fruit Research Commission and Washington State Commission on Pesticide Registration. And in addition to all that, thank you all very much for taking your time to be here. Now I'm ready to take questions. I did look at almost all instars, but this is the best time for juvenile hormone analogs to be useful, because they don't. I applied at the neonates; they just keep them as larvae forever. Oh, okay. They won't pupate; like it goes for months. So this is the only best time to use our juvenile hormone analogs in the IPM strategies.
I'm sorry, we don't.
Thank you.
We have heard the series of talk on pesticide resistance mechanism and pesticide resistance in the field, but my talk is a little bit different, so I'd like to direct in other directions, and I'll be talking on genetic diversity of Liguus hesperus in Texas. And this is mirid, and it has a gradual metamorphosis. This is very important insect pest and found in the variety of the host and more than 100 different wild grasses. The weeds has been reported as an alternative host and is found from almost what we can list, almost from fruit, vegetable, oilseed, and any kind of field crop. So, especially in cotton, it's a very important insect pest, and for canola and some other crops too. But the motivation why I choose this insect as a subject of study is, of course, its economic importance, because it's a major pest in most of the crops. And if we check into the statistic, only in the cotton, we can say it cost the loss of around $60 million annually, less than on an average, only in the cotton industry. And if we accumulate in other crops, and it's a big harm to the economy. So moreover, not only the economic importance, the more important ecological aspect is it has a very wide host and wide geographical distributions. And it has been found in the western part of the continent, and that's why the common name is Western Tarnished Plant Bug. And when we started working with these bugs from different places, and I've been working in a morphological data, and I've seen various color variation, size variation, and within the same species from different places and different hosts. And that's why the question triggered that are all the Vagus hesperus that we call from different locations are the same genetically, or are they evolving as a subspecies at the geographical level? So that's why the objective of my study is to determine the genetic population structure and evaluate some of the simple sequence repeat or the microsatellite marker that we have developed in our laboratory. So I'm trying to hit two targets with the same research. And the research hypothesis is whether the populations, naturally occurring population from different locations within the taxus, I started the checking the population in the small geographical separations, and are they, do they have genetic structure, are they different in genetically, or they are all homogeneous? So that's the one question. And the second is whether they have the random matching, or the population, are they in the neutrality or the Hardy-Weinberg equilibrium status, or there is some biasness or the constraint in the population so that they are evolving in some other directions. And the third question is how much gene flow is in between the populations. So these are the three main research hypotheses. And in the methodology parts, I collected insects from the alfalfa, same host, from four different locations, and is this is the happy, the northeast one, and then Plainview and Arlu and the Lameshad. All of these three are 50 mile distance, but the last one is around 90 mile distance from one place to another. So the number of the sample I got from each location is 48 samples. I combine male and female together, so we didn't separate the sexes. And I choose the SSR as a tool for the from the choice of baskets that we have variety of the tools, molecular tools, to use the genetic diversity study. But I found that genome-wide distribution and its polymorphism, as well as the codominance nature, may help better to isolate or the differentiate between the populations. So, and we have already developed, and some we are developing. So that's why I choose those markers. Here in the yellow boxes are already published from our lab, and they have the SSN numbers. So they are the public SSR markers, and the below, and these are being processed, and in near future we are combining some others and publishing those more markers. So I just, this is a subset of data that we have, around 15 markers, but I'm trying to present only subsets of data for this talk. And use six molecular marker, and the PCR condition we use 55 ranging to 63 degrees Celsius for the annealing temperature. Once we ran the PCR reaction with those primer and the genotyping mechanism, we didn't have the capillary electrophoresis facility, but we found out that the cheapest and high throughput method that developed by Wang et al., and we tried, and I'm very satisfied with the system that we can run the 6% polyacrylamide gel, vertical gel, in a 32 centimeter tall slab, stacking two population per plate. So there are two plates, and in total you can run the 400 sample at a time in a 4 hours. So it's a high throughput. And for imaging also, I used Baranja et al.'s procedure for silver staining, and it's a very fast, like 15 minutes protocol, and taking pictures, simple digital camera is perfect. So, and data are collected, scored as a codominant marker, and assume that co-migrating bands are the homologous, that's the assumption that we have in all the electrophoresis system. And the software I use for the data analysis at the free web-based software, GenePop, PopGene, and for the cluster analysis, I use the MATLAB function that written by Dr. Rich Strauss in biology, Texas Tech. And analysis were done simple for the general statistic for the allele frequencies and cluster analysis using the UPGMA and Hardy-Weinberg equilibrium test. And the, for the results here, out of the six locus, this locus 32 has the highest number of the allele. The NA is the number of the allele they observed, and the lower number of the allele are 3 in next 63, and on an average, in total we got the 24, so average of 4, a little more than 4 allele per locus. And the allele size range I restricted to score the allele from 105 to 207. If they are too low than this and too high than this, I just neglected those bands. And thickest bands only scored. Based on these alleles, the Shannon informatic information index for the locus was very satisfactory, except the locus 47. It has little low, but it still is close to 0.5. So all the primers and all the markers we use have satisfactory information content value. And it shows most of the markers for this population are heterozygotes, and some of them, for especially 47 and number 4, are more homozygous. And Hardy-Weinberg test shows the overall populations are significantly different from the equilibrium. So that's why I ran the cluster analysis, and it shows the Ardlew and Lamesha population are close, and the Happy and Plainview populations are distinct. Geographically, these Ardlew and Lamesha are the close, Happy and Plainview. Plainview should be in the middle geographically, but the genetically, the population separation are not according to geography. They are different. There might be some other region, the ecological region and other regions, rather than geographical only in the genetic diversity. So in the summary, the marker tested found to be very satisfactory, except the one has a little low value, and the overall genetic distance do not agree with the geographical distances, and the primer we need to use more to get the strong data, and the future plan is to use the bigger data sets and a bigger number of the samples and biologically validate those the distinct populations. The genetic variation, do they mean anything to the biology? That kind of question needs to be addressed and is in the progress. And finally, we are comparing different markers to get the best tool to be used. Finally, I would like to thank my major professor, Dr. Meghe Parajuli, giving me opportunity to work in this project, and the biology department and graduate school, Texas Tech University, giving me the travel grant so that I could come here and present, and some others, staff from TAS, Stanley Carroll, Sarah Ritchie, Avilas Balachandran, and other friends for helping me in collecting insects and processing. And thank you all for being here. Thank you. I restricted only for the alfalfa, one host for the first time, and we are doing different hosts also in the future. So there may be some hosts associated with different cities also. That's good. Good place.
I would like to begin with a short background about the system I'm studying here. I'm studying the glassy winged sharpshooter, Homolotisca vitrifinus, which is an efficient vector of the xylem-limited bacterium Xylella fastidiosa that causes number of diseases for plant crops, especially here in California, the Persis disease of grapevine. It colonizes naturally both the foregut of the insect vector as well as the xylem vessels of plants, interfering with the fluid flow as well as altering the biochemistry and physiology of the plant. a general mechanism we're working on in our lab involves two separate events. The first one, where the insect vector inoculates the pathogen into a healthy plant through the process of egestion salivation. And the second event involves the acquisition of the bacterium from an infected plant by the insect vector through the ingestion. So this is the general, but we're working on a number of hypotheses and processes involved in this bigger picture, one of which is the salivary biochemistry and physiology of the insect vector. GWIS, or the glassy-winged sharpshooter, follows a salivary sheath feeding strategy, and this means those insects produce two types of saliva, the solid saliva and a liquid saliva, and depending on physical position, the solid saliva can be either salivary phalange or salivary sheath, and both have a physical function where they assist the attachment of the mouth parts to the plant, as well as sealing the mouth parts inside the plant tissue to assist the uptake of the fluids, as well as to protect the mouth parts of any plant reactions. The liquid saliva on